Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Most famous person to come out of Leavenworth since Colin Powell. Melissa Etheridge is your artist of the day. And as we discuss and continue to talk about the coronavirus, COVID-19, there is a glimmer of hope. And let's bring in Dr. Greg Mundis from Missouri, whose parents were both diagnosed with COVID-19, and they are on the mend after some treatment. And you were on Dr. Oz the other day. That's how we found you, Dr. Mundis. Can you tell us, A, what happened to your parents, and B, what did they do?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on the show, guys, by the way. I really appreciate it. You guys have a great thing going on, and I've had the opportunity to listen out on it a little bit. Anyway, just want to commend you guys on that and the coverage that you're providing. But
thank you.
Yeah, kind of a crazy story is that, you know, my dad, who's relatively really healthy, 69-year-old guy, is employed, working full time, and his job requires a lot of social interaction. And he was hosting some French delegates, you know, about 2 weeks ago. And they were not sick at the time at all. They had dinner, hung out together. They had some speaking engagements they were doing, and then they went home. And upon arriving home, they started feeling ill, and they ultimately ended up being diagnosed with COVID. And in the interim, back home, about a week and a half ago now, my dad started feeling ill. That was on a Thursday. Started spiking temperatures on Friday, went in for some testing, and ruled out like the flu and other common causes over the course of the weekend, but did not get tested for COVID until Monday, when he was feeling really lethargic, but didn't have a cough or shortness of breath like most are having. He just was feeling lethargic and had a fever, and so he got tested. By the time he got home, he was so sick that 911 was called, and he was transported via the ambulance back to the hospital here in Springfield, Missouri, and to within four short hours, he was placed on a ventilator because he could no longer breathe on his own.
Oh my.
Yeah, so pretty crazy for my dad. We got the phone call that night that he probably wouldn't make it through the night, and that's when I hopped on a plane and got out here as quick as I could. I got to see him from outside the ICU door, but obviously was not allowed in the room at all with him. And then within a couple days, the entire hospital shut down all their visitations. So no more visitors are allowed even in the hospital. So it's been almost a week since I've seen him. And you know, that's hard too as a son. So at the same time, in parallel, my mom, like 2 days after my dad goes to the hospital, starts spiking temperatures as well. And so she goes to ER on my dad went to the hospital on Monday. She goes to ER on Wednesday. And upon arriving to ER, they fortunately were allowing me to participate in her care a little bit. I'm a physician, actually, by trade. So I work out in San Diego. That's where I'm from. And we got her on hydroxychloroquine right off the bat. We also placed her on an antibiotic at the same time to prevent any of the secondary pneumonias, because my mom has chronic asthma in addition to diabetes, so she's super high risk to develop sort of the bad version of this virus. She did okay for a couple days, ended up having to get admitted to the hospital on Friday, and then was let go home on Monday of this week. And she's recovering at home and doing okay. And my dad remains in the ICU right now on the ventilator. He, too, was started on the hydroxychloroquine, mind you, only once he tested positive, which was, I think, on Thursday of that week. And so he's been on it ever since. It's typically written for about 5 days, but there's some reports that have been published internationally on keeping patients on that drug for a total of 10 days. And he's going to be on the 10-day course of that drug.
So are they kind of, and so much for the information because people are looking for good news here. Are they kind of guinea pigs in that they are using this off-label? We've all heard about taking the hydroxychloroquine with erythromycin, I believe it is. Are they kind of guinea pigs in this because we're just now hearing about the combination of these two drugs?
Yeah, so the reason, you know, obviously it was such a short timeline that not much has been published, but the French have done a decent job of trying to identify a group of patients that did well, and they didn't just follow them clinically. They're actually testing their viral load, so they're actually doing some pretty intricate testing using a laboratory value to measure how much virus is in the patient. They found that the patients that were on that combination actually had a decreased viral load and their symptoms were not as severe and the duration of the disease not as long. Now, mind you, it's in a small cohort of patients. They only have six that they're able to study that way, 22 total. So it wasn't like, it's not like earth-shattering. It's just going to work on everybody. It's just a small number, but it's sort of the best, one of the best data points we have so far. So absolutely, it's experimental, and even when the doctors have been talking to me about it, they always say, you know, Greg, it's experimental, so we just kind of make sure that you're understanding of that, because if it doesn't work or if it causes side effects, you know, these are things that we don't understand yet. So
We've seen other patients in other parts of the country who have tried to take this and ended up dying. I mean, there are side effects to the drugs. You're not supposed to be willy-nilly taking these drugs as some kind of home remedy. But describe, doctor, these are drugs that are normally used already to treat. It's rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, is it not?
And malaria.
Yep. And then malaria is probably the other common one. You know, you raise a very important point. These are not like miracle drugs. Everyone's just go on them just for the heck of it. They have real side effects. Ironically, both my parents had it. And probably the main thing that we are worried about as physicians is that it actually causes a change in your EKG. It's called a prolonged QT interval. And what that does is it kind of predisposes you to have a higher risk of sudden cardiac death. So that's not a good complication, right? Like, especially
no, that would be. I think most people would agree that's bad.
Right. That's a bad day, right? So, okay, good. We're on the same page. Just making sure. So my mom developed that because we started her on the higher dose of the hydroxychloroquine, which is 600 over the course of a day, and she ended up having an adverse response to that. She got a flight. She brought her to the hospital. They found it. We kept her off the drug for a full day and then put her back on it in a smaller dose, and she has done fine with that. My dad similarly had the same exact thing happen to him in the ICU where that interval on the EKG also went long to the point where they actually didn't want to add the antibiotics because the combination of the malaria medicine, the hydroxychloroquine, in addition to the azithromycin, they both carry the same downside effect on the heart. So in combination, it can actually be far more toxic to the heart than taken alone, if that makes sense, because they both have the same complication profile with that regard. So I think it has to definitely be under physician direction. It should not be used just flippantly. These aren't medicines you just start taking because you have a sniffle. You know, there are significant side effects. That's why the medical community is, you know, we're hopeful that this works, but please make sure it's under the direction of your physician.
Now, doctor, let me understand this right. Your dad got sick first, correct?
Yeah.
And then your mom got sick, right?
Yeah.
But she is already out of the hospital, and he's still in it, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what makes the story awesome. Because, yeah, completely anecdotal, non-scientific, and I have a huge bias, and I want my mom to be better. But we started on those medications before she got really ill. She spiked a fever, and like 6 hours later, she was on that drug.
Oh.
And And my dad spiked the fever on Thursday and didn't get on the drug until the following Wednesday or Thursday, I think it was. So almost a week delay, okay? And I think that story in and of itself is likely probably more consistent with what we're understanding from our international medical community, which is the drug seems to tamper the effect of the virus, not necessarily cure it, right? I did an ABC interview the other day as well, and they kept wanting me to say that, Greg, just say that hydroxychloroquine is a miracle drug. And the reality, it's not a miracle drug. You know,
it's not,
the miracle drug is stay home. That's the miracle drug. Like, the best way to treat this thing is prevention. Don't get it. The only way to not get it is just to stay home. Like, weather the storm. We all hate it. It stinks. But just do it.
No, it's pretty awesome, actually.
Hey, doctor.
Yeah.
We are actually up against a break. Will you hang on just for one more segment? We have so many questions we want to ask you, not only about the recovery of your sweet mom and dad, but just as a healthcare professional in general, anytime we can get a physician on the air, instead of us two dum-dums trying to talk about coronavirus, we'll take it.
I'd be happy to stick around.
All right.
By the way, I include myself in the dum-dum list. So
well, no. Listen, you got a dum-dum from Leavenworth and a dum-dum from Emporia in Topeka, so you far exceed our expectations.
Oh, no. All right. I'll hang tight, guys.
All right, hang tight. Dr. Greg Mundis will be joining us on the other side, 576-7790. Hey, doctor, can you take some questions if we have some?
Yeah, I'd be happy.
From the audience? Okay. If you guys in the audience have some questions for the doctor, 576-7798. He'll answer them to the best of his ability. 576-7798. Sam Stevie the Third, Dana Wright. I'm Scott Parks on KMBZ.
Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
All right, welcome back.
Give me the beat, boys, and free
Dana
my soul.
Parks. Good afternoon. Beautiful day here in Kansas City. I don't know what the guy is doing across the street, but I hope you can't hear it over the air. He is chainsawing something to pieces. I hope it's not a person. Dr. Greg Mundis is joining us on the hotline. His parents, both of his parents, were infected with COVID-19. They were hospitalized in Springfield, Missouri. They used an experimental cocktail, and both seem to be on the mend. And this is what you've been hearing from the president in some of his press briefings and others. And Dr. Mundis joins us back on the hotline. Dana?
Yeah, this is the drug that the president called a game changer, but with a warning, doctor, because, you know, you say there are side effects to these drugs. Believed it helped your mom and dad. Do you believe it saved your mom and dad?
You know, gosh, that's really hard to say. When they asked me that on a TV show the other day as well. I the candid response is no. And let me explain that, because I believe the physicians that are interceding on behalf of my dad are probably the ones that are saving his life. Drugs are just a tool that they use in addition to everything else that's saving his life right now. So, certainly, the cocktail we're using is likely having a positive effect on decreasing the effect of the virus on my dad. So I would say, it's certainly part of the miracle happening in his life is what I'd say. You know, he's still critically ill. He's not out of the woods, you know, but it's certainly what's keeping him alive.
And you would agree, doctor, we have to be careful here not to spread false hope. I mean, this is going to take probably a year before we even get a vaccine. And I know this isn't a vaccine. This might just be a treatment. But we do need to be careful, and I don't want to participate in, and I know as a physician you don't want to participate in, false hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And mind you, I'm a scientist, right? So by nature, when, you know, I hear something on a news flash or whatever, it doesn't excite me as much as if I have a randomized, you know, placebo-controlled trial that tells me that this drug's effective. Well, that gets my scientific interest at a much higher level. So we just have to be careful and cautious, and that's why I keep saying, you know, it's nice to have a lot of these anecdotal reports come out, because it's the creativity of our medical field that's really going to get us through this. We have to have that creativity, because we don't have anything else right now. So it's important that we allow the physicians to be creative. Every patient's also really unique. There's reasons why my dad, for instance, couldn't be on a drug called remdesivir, which seems to have some promise as well, but it's because he had certain circumstances that didn't allow him to get treated with that. And it's being touted as the next miracle drug. And so we just have to be careful with how inflammatory we make our statements, because it's probably, you know, in the middle of the road somewhere. Is it a miracle drug? No. But is it going to help? Absolutely, I think it will.
Doctor, let's bring in a couple callers here real quick who have some questions for you. Marilyn and Lee Summit. Marilyn, good afternoon. You're on with Dr. Greg Mundus. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Mundus. I was just going to kind of share my experience, what happened today. I've been taking hydroxychloroquine for RA for over 20 years, probably. I've always ordered it through a Canadian pharmacy, and when I went to refill it this morning, the price had jumped from $80 to over
$200.
Oh, my God. I immediately emailed my doctor and said, is there a chance I can get it anywhere else? Because maybe, you know, the price is between Canadian and American. Maybe it's going to be different now. She said, you're not going to find it anywhere. It's backlogged everywhere. So everybody's picked up on this. So I guess I have 2 points. The first one being, I would like to warn anybody who's got RA that you may have a trouble, or if anybody else taking that drug, you may have trouble getting it filled. And then my second question is, you know, we have my mom now living with us, who's in her 70s. I'm almost tempted to stop taking it, because should she need it, I would rather go in remission than her not be able to find it. And what would be your advice on that?
Doctor?
Well, first of all, thank you for bringing up a really important line. I'm actually part of a Facebook group where there are critical care doctors and pulmonologists and some rheumatologists are a part of. Uh-huh. And the rheumatologists have been raising up this question right now, which is the problem when these national statements are made about miracle drugs and, you know, is that people like toilet paper, you know, will start like hoarding toilet paper for no apparently good reason, because this virus doesn't affect that system. At the same time, you know, you start mentioning a drug and all of a sudden everyone goes out and hoards the drug, you know.
Exactly.
It's a huge problem, because there's so many patients just like yourself that are needing that drug just to stay in a functional state, because if you don't have it, you know, remission from rheumatoid arthritis, it's not a joke. I mean, yeah, then your mom gets it, but then you can't care for it because your joints are hurting so bad. So the right thing is for us to take a step back and just allow the physician workforce to control the administration of the drug, instead of kind of going and doing this type of hoarding just in case people run out. The reality is, it's a really old drug. It's a very safe drug. There's a lot of patients like yourself that have been on it for years and years, and that's why we know it's a very safe medication to use. Yeah. If we just allow the course of this disease to be what it is, I think there'll be plenty of the drug out there, because the companies are starting to manufacture more of it, obviously.
Hey, doctor, can you stick around for a little bit? You got to go anywhere?
Nope, I can stick around for one more second. Can I answer the second part of that question real quick or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, quick. Can you do it on the other side? We got to get to the news. Can
sure.
you do it on the other
Sounds
side?
Good. Go for
All right,
it.
Yeah, we'll do that as soon as we get back from the news. Dr. Greg Mundus is joining us on the hotline, 576-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. News is next here on KMBZ. Elton John coming at you this afternoon. Now, we're going to try to do this sometime before the week is out. Get Will Starrett back in. Maybe from his house. I don't know if we're going to have to do it that way because we're all on location. But I've got to do some Jam or No Jam this week. And so if we can get Will Starrett in here, we will do that. Joining us on the hotline is Dr. Greg Mundus, who practices in San Diego. His parents live in Missouri, and both were diagnosed with COVID-19. Both received this cocktail that you've heard the president talking about this week. And mom did really well. Dad is doing okay. Doctor, I assume you're still with us.
Yes, sir.
Let me read to you just briefly, and we're going to talk about this in the 4 o'clock hour of the show today. But there is a Dr. Michael Segal, who writes in the Wall Street Journal today regarding first responders. I'd like to get your thoughts on this. He is suggesting that first responders be intentionally exposed to the coronavirus – go into isolation, and after 3 weeks come back to work, they would have built up antibodies, etc. Let me read from Dr. Segal in the Wall Street Journal, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this. An approach that could work: emergency responders who are entering quarantine after exposure could be allowed to volunteer for deliberate infection, provided they are at low risk of complications. For people in their 20s and early 30s without a known risk factor, most will have a mild illness or no symptoms at all. Some will need medical care, but few will die. After about 3 weeks of quarantine, antibody testing could show that these volunteers have built immunity and testing for coronavirus and could demonstrate that they are no longer infectious. Anyone so certified could return to duty free of further restriction. Your thoughts?
Well, it's an interesting scenario, truthfully. I just pulled it up while you were reading it as well. It's an interesting point because certainly the number of coronavirus cases in our country is just entirely grossly underreported, you know, especially if you look at number of testing being done here versus, say, South Korea. I think we're a factor of like 200 less likely to get tested here than you are in South Korea, for instance. So testing is an issue. But I would say the concept of building up immunity and then using that to our advantage would be actually very interesting. But I would say that would have to be done in a extremely strict environment and studied in a very tight way, because the reality is if someone's exposed, it's kind of like tell my family about it, especially I have four young kids, right? And they're like, why the heck, Dad? I'm not sick. I'm not going to get it. Young people, I don't have a problem with it. Well, here's the problem. Kids wipe their nose. They go to the grocery store. They, you know, they pick up the box of Cap'n Crunch, and they're like, you know what? I don't want it. And they walk away. And next thing you know, a little old lady walks up, grabs the Cap'n Crunch where my kid wiped his nose on. He's infectious, but he has mild symptoms. She wipes her nose because we all touch our face 2,000 or 3,000 times a day. At some point, she gets infected, and she gets violently ill, right? So the issue is, how are we going to set things up where that doesn't happen, that scenario? And I think it may be a little bit irresponsible to have this type of plan in a setting where it's not entirely controlled, even living circumstances and protocols on everything, because that have to be so tightly controlled to make sure that these people are not just maintain themselves as vectors or carriers of this disease.
The only thing wrong with your analogy, Doctor, and I loved it, but old people do not eat Cap'n Crunch.
Oh, come on now. I guarantee I'll be eating Cap'n Crunch 40 years from now.
Hey, Doctor.
Okay, fiber brand.
When do you think we will know? How do I ask this? Like your mom and dad, who we know for a fact have quarantine, they have tested positive. When will we know that your body has built up some natural immunity from it if you have already had it? Or like the flu, we know changes year to year to year. So theoretically, because it changes, you could get it year to year to year. Mm. When do you think we'll know about COVID-19, how our own immune response system works to it?
That's probably up to the immunologists and those studying the genetics of this virus. I don't have that precise answer on that. I just have some anecdotal of what I've been reading, which is, for instance, South Korea is using two negative tests as their response to saying that someone that's been exposed is now no longer containing the virus. So there does appear to be a pretty significant lag in the amount of time it takes to say that you're negative after you've been exposed. It's going to, you know, until we have some type of testing available where we can say, do you have some antibody to this virus, it's going to be difficult to make that assumption.
All right. Hey, Doctor, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Carol in Raymore. Carol, good afternoon, and welcome. You're on with Dr. Greg Mundus. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Mundus. Hi, Scott.
Hi, there.
Hi, Dana.
Hi.
My question is, I have chronic asthma. I'm on oxygen 24/7. I also have multiple sclerosis. So my immune system is pretty weak. Anyway, I take the hydroxychloroquine, 200 milligrams twice a day on a regular basis and have for several years. does that give me any kind of an immunity to this, maybe? Mm. Or is there any way it helps, or how would that be? Because I can't take erythromycin or azithromycin either one.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously I tell you, the hydroxychloroquine is not a preventative drug. We know that. It actually has a negative effect on the virus itself. It would be an interesting study to expose, you know, an animal or whatever model to doses of the hydroxychloroquine first and then infect them with the virus to see what the effect is versus the other way around. But as of right now, we don't know that answer. What I would tell you, though, in general, is that just because you're on the hydroxychloroquine does not make you resistant to getting infected with that virus. So for someone like yourself that has other underlying illnesses, maintaining this quarantine is extremely important. And again, it's the best way humanly possible to not deal with this disease. It's just to not get it to begin with, which means really respecting the limitations put on us by our government officials and our medical community.
Have you been tested?
I have not. Testing is still reserved for those that have symptoms. And I've technically not been exposed, and I'm symptom free, so I'm pretty low risk.
Doctor, can you give us a snapshot of what the healthcare system looks like, not only in Springfield, Missouri, but in California, where you practiced? And we all see the news every night about the concerns of a lack of respirators and masks and that type of thing. What are you seeing in Missouri?
Yeah, so interesting, because I've gotten to go through this process twice now. As you said, once in San Diego, which is about a week ahead of where I'm at here. And then here, the whole thing got ramped up while I've been here. I'll tell you, the care in the ICU is phenomenal, but I am very concerned with what's happening on the ground level, the communication between primary care docs and patients that are having symptoms and can't get tested. If you look at places like Seattle and New York now, and certainly in Italy and in China and South Korea, they actually set up wards just for symptomatic patients, where they would come get them tested, keep them until their symptoms got better, and then send them home, and that was all done. Here, we're just telling everyone to stay home, which may be kind of the wrong answer if you're in a home with six other people, especially if you have elderly in your home. You may be infecting everybody in your home instead of getting isolated, being with those that are also infected and kind of letting the course run itself. So from the time of even, you know, speaking with physicians that are in the emergency room, their education level is still not probably what it needs to be, or at least it wasn't 3 or 4 days ago compared to what the rest of the country has. And so there's this massive volume of information coming, and everyone's sort of starting to get caught up. Fortunately, we do have the University of Washington, which has very clearly documented all of their steps along this way, and they've made all of their protocols available for anyone who wants to see it all for free. So they're certainly leading the way in educating our public. University of California in San Francisco has been similarly very engaged in getting the word out.
Doctor, what is your specialty, if I can ask?
I'm a spine surgeon.
Okay, so
completely useless for this disease.
No. My girlfriend, no, you're not useless.
I'm out of a job, man. They canceled all my surgeries. I'm out of a job.
My girlfriend is a nurse practitioner for a spine surgeon, and they had to cancel all of their surgeries as well, even though I know, having talked to her as much as I do, these people are in incredible pain. I mean, but it is technically non-essential surgery. But you know, I mean, these people are still suffering.
Live with your pain another month. Live with your pain another month. It'll be okay. That's the bottom line.
Right on. Hey, you got 10 more minutes?
Sure.
All right. Everybody wants to talk to you. So
yes, I would love for you to stay. And I also want to talk quickly, Scott, when we come back, about the issues we're starting to see in rural communities and what the heck the doctor thinks about that. It's coming in these small towns that do not have people like spine surgeons. What are we going to do?
All right. Doctor, you can stick around for 10 more minutes.
Sure thing.
All right. Completely worthless Dr. Greg Mundus is going to stay with you know I'm kidding you, man. I'm totally kidding you.
That's perfectly. I think it's quoted from me.
Dr. Mundus joins us on the other side here on KMBZ. Dr. Greg Mundus is joining us on the hotline. Dr. Greg, Van Halen a great band or the greatest band of all time?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
He's no, not going to answer that.
You don't get to continue if you don't answer the question. Van Halen, a great band or the greatest band of all time?
A good band.
Okay. Excuse me?
Okay, that's better. Hey, doctor, on to more important questions with your time. Since you have been through this with your mom and your dad, what advice do you give people as a physician but also as a son if people are listening and they have elderly people in their lives that start to exhibit symptoms? What would you say that they should do?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, the main thing is being prepared at home, at least, to have a way to measure your own temperature, I think is important. I think another nice little device, if you can afford it, is a oxygen sensor that you can buy at Walgreens or CVS or your local pharmacy, especially if you have someone that has any underlying pulmonary disease. I don't think it's necessary for just normal people to have that, but certainly if, you know, you're over 60 and you carry multiple comorbidities, I think having that on hand as well as a blood pressure cuff would be good, because you'll be able to give your physician answers immediately over the phone about your current state, and being able to monitor those vital signs independently will actually be very useful in the decision tree and the algorithms in place on who needs care right away or who doesn't.
You said earlier in the last segment that you're a spine doctor. You obviously do work on people's backs. Are you prepared to come, and I know elective surgery at most hospitals have been canceled. Have you been asked, or are you prepared to just come in off the sidelines if necessary?
Oh, funny you say that. I just answered a survey from my hospital saying, are you willing to help out in the urgent care, the ER, on the floor, in the ICU, and certainly I'm very happy to do whatever I can and do my part from a medical standpoint. I mean, it goes without saying, you know, I could easily work a patient up, but when it comes to more complex decision-making, I probably have to, you know, call in the troops, especially of the internal medicine docs that have a better handle on, you know, the entire body physiology. But certainly, you know, I'm probably in decent shape to at least screen, triage patients and get them to the appropriate wards.
How are you going to get by? I mean, your practice, at least for the time being, has been canceled. And I know that, you know, most people don't have a lot of sympathy financially for doctors. You guys make a lot of money, but you also have to continue to make a living. How are you going to do that?
So I just did a podcast yesterday for about 1,000 neurosurgeons, and that question came up is, like, especially the young guys, they just want to, you know, bear down and grind through this, and I'm telling them, don't do that. Here's the deal. Like, the number of patients that need our help and our care, that need surgery, that need medical intervention, that need direction, that number doesn't change, guys. Like, we're still going to be just as in high demand after this thing passes. Mm. I'm just telling you, it's way better if we all shut it down for a short period of time and then ramp right back up than it is for this thing to drag out for 3 or 4 months. That's when it gets to be a problem, right? So my point is, everybody stay home, do your part. You know, let's beat this thing in the fastest way possible, which is by us all being really responsible with how we're communicating, contacting, socializing. And if we let this thing pass, none of us are going to be affected that well, and especially in the medical side of things or the surgical side of things. Like, so maybe I'll have to work a few days, a week, a little bit later instead of, you know, being done earlier. But I would just say I would implore, especially the physicians, don't worry about it. Let's do what we're called to do, which is take care of people. Mm. And right now we're being asked to do that in a different way. So it's without my hands, it's with our, you know, with our brains and, well, whatever's left of me if you're an orthopedist.
and doctor, final question, because I think it's so important. You know, we hear so much in the news about New York and California, and those are critical spaces right now, just critical in this fight against the pandemic. What do you say to the rural providers who, I mean, there are so many people who don't even have a local hospital, and what the heck do those folks do?
Yeah, well, it's important that I think everyone should put a game plan together for themselves and their families. I think it's important to do that, to say, hey, if I did get sick, here's what's going to happen, step one, two, and three. I do think it's important for us to have some Tylenol at home. Everyone should probably be taking some vitamin C, and if you have supplements that have some zinc in it, it's probably not a bad idea. So those are kind of things that we can do at home to keep ourselves healthy. But then you should have a plan in place that if you do get sick, that you know what's going to happen. And I think it's important for residents, for people that are maybe listening, the viewership here, or the listenership, to know, like, if I get a fever, what's my next step? And when I need to go in somewhere, where am I actually going to go to get checked out? If I did need to be tested for this disease, where's the nearest testing center? So I do think those pieces are important to the puzzle. And like I said, being prepared at home is important. I don't think it means hoarding, but it does mean being responsible with whoever's in the household.
Hey, doctor, you've been really good. Can we call on you in the future if that's okay with you?
Sure, sure. As long as I'm still out of a job, this works fine.
Now, keep in mind, we don't pay, but we would love to have your expertise on the show if you're willing to do it.
Happy to. Thank you.
All right. Well, we will be in touch. Dr. Greg Mundis, do appreciate your time. God bless your mother, and God bless your father, and God bless your whole family.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Remember, this battle's going to be won at home and on our knees, so let's all be praying that way, okay?
Amen.
God's a faithful God that's here to look out after us. We've got to do our part, okay?
Amen, brother. We'll be in touch, okay?
Okay, guys.
All right. That is Dr. Greg Mundis. The news is coming up in just a moment. When we get back, should first responders be intentionally infected with this disease? We'll get to that in just a moment. 576-7798 here on KMBZ.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.